The following program contains the opinions of the host, guests, and call-in participants. These do not necessarily represent the views of this show's distributors or sponsors. This program may contain obscene, profane, or otherwise objectionable language. Viewer discretion is advised. Like the intro says, coming to you cordless, everybody. It's 11:02 p.m. on the East Coast of the United States, 8:02 p.m. on the West Coast. That's right. What is your fucking problem? All right. And it's 2 o'clock in the afternoon in Sydney, Australia. And here where I'm sitting in Northeast Minneapolis, it's 2 minutes after 10 p.m. And yes, this is live. He said, as he coughed into the mic, I'm Jim Peters, and welcome to another edition of Jim Peters Tonight, installment number 54. It's Wednesday, November 29th, 2023. I was going to say 2021, but yeah. You know, here's the deal. I'm 68 years old. All of life is blended together. I have no idea. There's stuff I think happened 5 years ago that happened 40 years ago, and vice versa. Can't tell anymore. Hold on. I need a little drink. That is water, by the way. I'm really fond of scotch, but if you think I can drink scotch and do this, you're nuts. I can't. So, so what happened? Well, no, I got some announcements. I got one announcement. Not only do we not have a guest tonight, we don't have a guest tomorrow night, which means this is the 15th week we've done the show, 4 nights a week. Now, granted, there's quite a few weeks where we missed a day for whatever reason. So, about half of those weeks are probably only 3 days. That said, this is the first full week where I haven't had any guests at all. And I'm not going to have one tomorrow night either. I'm just planning for tomorrow, for next week. I'm just plowing forward. And I kind of wanted to see what this was like. You're talking to you an hour nonstop, 4 nights a week. You know, I got to admit, I kind of like it, but whatever. I like talking to people too. I have two missions with this program other than to make money. That is to get a whole bunch of interesting people on here for you to listen to and watch, interest in anything, you know, not just politics. As a matter of fact, I don't know if you noticed, when it comes to the guests, I kind of stay away from politics, not really, not necessarily the news. My previous employer, I did like 400 podcasts and radio shows over the course of like three years. I only had one sitting politician on. I don't like to have politicians on my show. I don't. You know why? All they'll talk about is shit to get them elected. They're just fucking liars. I mean, they're basically forced to lie because of their profession. Well, yeah, but that said, it shouldn't be their profession. You know, there's a cartoon running around right now, a political cartoon that just came out a few days ago, and I can't remember who drew it. I can't remember who the artist is. But it's basically the founding fathers sitting around drawing up the Constitution, and one says, should we put in term limits? And the other says, well, no one's ever going to want to do this for a living. Yeah, right. Yeah, sure. And that is a one flaw in the Constitution. It never occurred to the founding fathers that people would want to be in Congress for 40 years. That never occurred to them. They thought that was, you know, it's not even that they thought it was a bad idea. Literally, they never thought of it. And so here we are. So yeah, no, I don't have politicians on the show, but I do like to have on really, really interesting guests. You know, we talk a lot about Bigfoot. We talk about the UFO stuff. We've had all sorts of different types of people on here, and I want to continue that. And then the second thing, and I'll be perfectly blunt about this, I don't have anything about this tonight, but I have tomorrow. I'm actually planning a day ahead. Unbelievable, even though with the changing news, but still. And that is, I want to convince all you people that climate change is complete and utter bullshit. It's bullshit. It's the single biggest grift ever floated among the American public. There's absolutely nothing to it. It's complete scientific trash. There's nothing. Now, I did an interview with Patrick Moore, one of the climatologists who's most famously against climate change. We did that about 2 months ago. It's the single most watched episode we've ever done. I suggest you watch it. The interview with him is about 50 minutes long. Him and a guy named Michael Schellenberger, who I'm still hoping to have on the show, have probably been the scientists who have been most outspoken about the fact that climate change is crap. I stumbled into this kind of well before I even thought of doing the show. Matter of fact, well before I was doing podcasts and radio shows on this the last few years. This is about 7-8 years ago. I actually can't remember what year it was. And I can't tell you where I was, who I was talking to. I just can't. I am basically bound by secrecy. I was at the Christmas party of a very large scientific organization. And I'm talking to this guy. And frankly, we're all getting trashed. Everyone's getting drunk. It's Christmas, right? So, but it's a bunch of scientists. I'm at the bar sitting with this guy who, it turns out, I kind of knew this kind of ahead of time. I kind of knew who he was. He's one of the premier research climatologists on the university level in the United States. And I'm talking to this guy, and we're drinking, you know. And I said to him, I just said, "Professor, tell me about climate change." And he slammed his drink onto the bar, and he says, "Yeah, I'll tell you about climate change." And he launched into a 20-minute diatribe of how climate change is complete utter bullshit. And this is the key. This is what he told me. He said, "The reason you never hear that is because everyone in our industry, in our business, that is climatology, either we have to toe this line or we don't get any money for our funding." That's what he told me. And then he went on to explain in scientific terms why it was complete utter crap. And I got to admit, I don't remember much about that because I was in the bag. not a good time to kind of tune out, but I don't remember specifically what he said. But he did tell me that climate change is complete utter bullshit. And the only reason anybody used that line is to get money. That's what he told me. Now, this is one of the most prominent people in this field. This happened about 7-8 years ago. I had just pretty much kind of finished my transition from liberalism to conservatism, and I was starting to wonder about climate change. I mean, I'm not a scientist, but I'm pretty astute in that area. I started my doubts because I just kind of didn't make it didn't scientifically it didn't make much sense to me. So then this guy tells me this, and I'm off to the races. And so now I'm, you know, a guy like Patrick Moore, and if you watch the interview, you'll find out Patrick Moore was one of the co-founders of Greenpeace. Yeah, he was one of those guys in the stupid rubber boats running around trying to keep these giant ships from hitting whales. He did all that stuff, you know, and he quit Greenpeace in protest about 15 years later. He said he was so new to the group, it wasn't called Greenpeace then. It was just a small committee of people in like Vancouver or something like that. He's Canadian. So he quit Greenpeace because of two things, because climate change is bullshit, and also the fact that Greenpeace and also the climatologists wouldn't recognize the fact that the solution to their problem, the elegant solution, is nuclear power. And he said he could not, you know, after Greenpeace spending 15 years bashing nuclear power, he finally came to the conclusion he couldn't, that was hypocritical. He couldn't do it anymore. And so it's a fascinating interview. You get a chance to watch it. Anyway, that's what I'm doing here. That's why I'm talking to you. And in the meantime, I'm going to tell you about how liberalism is bullshit. From a former liberal, here I am. I'm a former liberal. Yeah, it's bullshit. So, okay, so what I got, so we don't have a guest tonight. But I want to encourage you to call in. You go right here. See right here. jim@night.com/call. Now, the thing is, you have to go to that webpage because you're calling in with your camera. We are apparently the first, and I think still the only talk show in America that actually takes video phone calls. And that's just from not my two bits. Talkers Magazine said that 2 weeks before we started. And they're the Bible of talk media in the United States. That we're the first. So you have to go to that webpage and then click the big blue button at the top of the page, and it will take you to our preview screen. You don't have to download any software to do this. It's really simple. Matter of fact, I've asked every single person who's called in, and everyone has told me it's been godly simple. Our longtime caller, David from San Francisco, said it was harder to find our website than it was to call in, and I believe him. I think he's right. So at any rate, yeah, you can do that. The only caveat is you need to use a Google Chrome web browser, but almost everybody has that on their computers and their smartphones. If you're on iOS, if you're on an iPhone, you don't need a Google Chrome web browser. You use a Safari web browser that's built in. I won't get into why that is, but it works just fine. The other thing is, there's this QR code right here. If you have a phone on you and you scan that code, it will directly take you into our preview screen to put you in the queue for our virtual studio. That will do. You can do that too. Also, you can, and I'm going to encourage you to do this now. You can text us or voicemail us at the number here, 408-458-5088. At that number, 408-458-5088. You can either leave us a text or a 30-second voicemail at that number. I said this last night, and if I start doing this, it's not going to be after the first of the year. I might start monitoring the text messages in real time while we're on. I've had a lot of people give me shit up to now. I kind of refuse to follow the chats on the various services we're on. Well, partly because there's like five different chats, you know. I mean, we're on seven different services plus Spreaker audio only. So eight. So I'm not going to follow eight different chats. You know, shit. Have you noticed? I'm fucking confused, and if I can barely do this. And that's actually part of it. I don't want to break my concentration. But I thought, well, if there's a universal place and people really want me to do this, maybe I'll do this. So if you guys start texting me enough, I might consider doing that. That's where we're at today. So there's no guest today. There's no guest tomorrow. Screw you. All right. Excuse me. I do have some news, though. We do this live. Two hours ago, it was announced that Henry Kissinger, the former Secretary of State under Richard Nixon, passed away. He was 100 years old. The guy had an incredible life. Somebody, you know, said that, you know, the dark side. I read a quote when I was reading the obituaries a couple hours ago that said that, I can't remember who said it, said the dark side of Henry Kissinger was very, very dark, and that's probably true. He was involved in all sorts of shit, both positive and negative. I want to read you a few quotes of his here. He was well, you know, the guy basically looked like Poindexter. I mean, who are we fooling here? He was portly. He had a really thick German accent, heavy glasses. He was not what you would call a handsome man, and yet he dated some of the most beautiful women in the world. That is no shit. I mean, he really did. And he said, people asked him how he did that, and his quote was, "Power is the ultimate aphrodisiac." That's what he said. He's known for that quote. Okay, that's cool. Here's another quote he's known for. "There cannot be a crisis next week. My schedule is full." He said that apparently in 1969. The New York Times quoted him on that. And finally, in 1980, he told Time magazine, he said, "The longer I'm out of office, the more infallible I appear to myself," which is interesting. Anyway, he was an interesting guy. He won the Nobel Prize in 1973 for planning the U.S. military's exit from Vietnam. So Nixon did keep his promise. He got out of Vietnam. And, you know, and I'm going to talk about that in a few minutes. I've talked about this before. I re-talk about stuff because I don't know who's watched what show, you know. And besides, I don't have that much, you know, shit. So what's the difference between the kids who were protesting 60 years ago in the 1960s and today? Well, here's the primary difference. One of the primary differences is that those kids were right about the Vietnam War. They were. Now, I was, in the 1960s, I was an adolescent. I was basically 10 to 14 years old, roughly. Born in 1955, so in 65, right in the middle of the decade, I was 10. But I do remember this stuff. That's the thing. I'm watching TV, and where I grew up in my little town, there was some shit going on. So I do remember. But in retrospect, the kids who were protesting the Vietnam War were right. We basically killed 55,000 Americans for nothing. And it's really true. The minute we pulled out, North Vietnam won the war, and they took over South Vietnam. But the other thing is, the reason we were fighting that war, which was called the domino effect, is that Nixon and all the politicians at the time seemed to think that if we let Vietnam fall to the communists, there would be a domino effect and all the country, the little countries in the South, Indonesia, Laos, all of them would fall to the communists. That was the theory. Well, that didn't happen either. So it was really, it was, it turned out to be bullshit, you know? So that you do, you know, the those kids in the 1960s can claim some moral high ground. They were, I mean, history's basically come to regard them as right. They were right. What's going on now, and I, if you saw the description of my show today, the show's called, it's called They're Protesting Everything. So there was a city council meeting in Oakland a couple days ago. And of course, like all fucking progressive city councils, they decide they're going to pass a resolution about the Israeli war. Now, you know, first of all, it's completely pointless. It doesn't accomplish anything. It's just a bunch of social justice warriors that just decide they want to put some trophy on a virtue signal on a mantle or something. These cities that do this, they're not accomplishing anything. Nothing. It's just a declaration. That's all it is. Well, they decided they were going to condemn the war, but not Hamas. Got that? The first or initial vote was 6-2 on the council, except that hundreds of people showed up, and apparently almost all of them protesting pro-Hamas, that the Israelis are wrong and that Hamas is getting screwed here. Almost all of them. They changed the vote. It was a separate resolution, I guess. It was unanimous, 8-0, condemning Israel. They decided to condemn Israel. The stuff that first of all, virtually everybody who spoke to the council from the dais, virtually everybody was under 30 years old. There's that. And secondly, they're fucking idiots. I don't know how better to put this. I mean, I know. You know, that's like, it's almost a cop-out to say it that cogently or that's succinctly. But yeah, they're morons. They don't know what the hell they're talking about. One woman actually stood up and said that the whole thing was a false flag operation and that Israel killed their own people to make Hamas look bad. She said this, right? You know, and then, and here's the other thing, too. A lot of the protesters are still wearing masks. Now, I don't know if they're wearing masks because they're trying to hide their faces, which is probably likely, or also so many of them are in the bag progressives that they still think these masks help for COVID. I have no idea. I don't know. You know, I mean, I see people occasionally wearing masks out in Northeast Minneapolis here. I went shopping this afternoon for groceries. I'm one or two, a handful. And also I don't want to poo-poo that too much because I have a friend who has some serious autoimmune issues, and she wore a mask even before, although she's definitely absolutely in the tank leftist. She wore a mask before COVID asked us to, before the government, you know, even before this, I hate to say it, became fashionable. So, you know, I know there's people who have legitimate reasons for wearing masks. I know that. So, you know, you're going to see a few of them. And the one thing about COVID, I guess, you know, and I really hate to stick up for this because when it comes to COVID, the masks were completely useless and still are. There's just, you know, even for the flu, they're useless. I mean, this has been, how many studies do you need? It doesn't work. they don't work. But still, for other types of respiratory illnesses, they do or might. So I don't want to necessarily poo-poo masks per se. But, you know, I see a group of these protesters, and they're all wearing masks, and or not all of them, many of them. And I'm starting to think, well, what's up, you know? They're probably trying to hide their faces. And these people aren't that stupid. They have realized now that people have been, I don't know what you call it, reverse canceled. You know, like this woman at New York University who very famously came out for Hamas, lost her big-time six-figure job that she had already been accepted for, and they rescinded it. So, you know, and then here's the amazing thing. So she gets on the Twitter and she says that taking the job away from her was violence. Yeah, right. Sure. Yeah. I can't put this in more succinct terms. We have a whole bunch of young people in America now that are now absolutely fucking crazy. They've been brainwashed. They've been brainwashed by their leftist professors. This is, you know, I mean, how often do you, and the thing is, it's about everything. So let me explain this. Is the tree lighting for at 30 Rock going to be tomorrow? I think it is. They're expecting a huge protest crowd because there's an organization in New York City that's been organizing these protests, and they post basically the virtual posters for them and online social media. So they kind of know what's coming. But the amazing thing is at the last protest in New York, which was last Friday or something like that, there's a lot of people. They're not just wearing t-shirts that say, you know, they're against Israel. Now they're wearing t-shirts that say they're against capitalism. You know, they're basically, they're just against everything, you know. And you can't be a student of history and not come to the conclusion that communism doesn't work. That's the thing. You know, yeah, capitalism is ugly. Yeah, people get left behind. Yes, it's true. I mean, I'm not gonna sit here and bullshit you. It does happen. But the thing that it's still the best system ever devised, and it has still raised more people out of poverty than any other system anyone's come up with. Because at least in capitalism, at least you have a chance to escape poverty. You have a chance to do it. Communism, no. The lure is that you will, but you won't, because instead of raising some people up, okay, not everybody in capitalism is going to be raised up. Communism and its cousin socialism raises nobody up, and the socialists, they will tell you and tell you and tell you, no, it doesn't work. It's never worked ever. And then you got Bernie Sanders. It's democratic socialism. We're going to do it differently. Doesn't matter. It's not going to work. I mean, I talked last night about the economy, and I got a couple things here that happened since then. I'm happy to tell you that apparently I'm 24 hours before ahead of the news cycle. So first of all, it just came out this morning that Biden's ratings on the economy versus polls. And, you know, Real Clear Politics, they take an average of poll. It's a poll of polls. It's a meta poll, basically. His approval ratings have come down to an all-time low when it comes to the economy. So James Carville, there are people in the Democratic Party that say, well, no, things aren't that bad. James Carville says people just, this is a quote from him. He's, you know, a Democratic consultant, famously was Bill Clinton's campaign manager. People have just rendered a judgment and are not revisiting the judgment on Biden's economy. They have not revisited it. That's what he said. Ro Khanna, the representative from the House from California, he said, very simply, he said, I can tell you four reasons why the economy is bad. Reagan's tax cuts, Bush's tax cuts, Trump's tax cuts, and what was the fourth reason? It was, a Bush's war, Middle East war. That was it. Now, I said this last night, and I'm watching Fox Business this afternoon, and Stephen Moore, the economist, is on. Matter of fact, I even quoted an article of him yesterday, but he was on, and he said the same thing I said. Every single time in history that taxes have been cut, revenues to the government have gone up. You think you can increase revenues to the government by taxing more people or raising taxes? You can't, or you will not as well anyway, you know, because this is the thing, and you know, Khanna said this in his tweet. He said, I can solve this problem with one proposal: tax the ultra rich. Okay, all right, so how many ultra rich are there in the United States? This is the part that they never ever talk about. There's 330 million people living in the U.S. There's roughly 100 million people that pay taxes, federal taxes. Got that? Not every about half of all working Americans pay taxes. Some people just don't because they're literally be under the threshold, all sorts of reasons. There are about 100 million people in the United States that pay taxes. Do you know how many of those people are billionaires? You know, Bernie Sanders had to change this. He was bitching about millionaires, and then people very suddenly realized that he's a millionaire. And oh, by the way, John Lovett asked a couple days ago, how did that happen on a senator's salary? How did Bernie Sanders make all that money? You know, yeah, that's a good question. Yeah, now I don't know if you got some business running on the side. You know, I mean, Trump did, and I said this last night too. Jimmy Carter very famously owned Carter Farms, which, if I'm correct, is still the biggest producer of peanuts in the United States. He was wealthy. He came into the office wealthy. Okay, that's fine. We got that, all right? Bernie Sanders, as far as anyone's known, and I'm not exaggerating here, has never had a job with a for-profit company in his life. Never. He's worked for some nonprofits, but never for a for-profit company. Barack Obama had a job with a for-profit company for exactly 1 year. That was it of his entire life. Now, he was a capitalist, though. He made money selling books, and he actually did. He sold a shitload of books before he became president. I think even before he was senator, even, I think. You know, he became a millionaire from selling books. Okay, fine, cool. That's cool. You know, Joe Biden has never, I think the same thing. I think he's worked 1 year of his entire life for a for-profit company, I think. Where did he get all that money? Where? And the thing is, how come, you know, you're a public servant. We demand to deserve an answer to that. You and I don't need to know where you got your money. You don't need to know where I got my money. But if you're a public service, you're working for Congress, you've been elected, yeah, we need to know where you've got your money. And how come we don't know? You know, so Bernie famously changed his slogan from taxing millionaires to taxing billionaires because some people started realizing, oh, he's a millionaire. Oh, Jesus. Okay, fine. All right, so question, how many billionaires are there in the United States? Answer, 800, more or less. It literally changes day to day on the stock market, but it's about 800 people. All right, how many people in the United States have assets of more than $100 million? That's like one-tenth of a billionaire. That's still a shitload of money. Do you know the answer to that question? Once again, changes day to day. About 6,600, about 6,500, 6,600 people have assets of over $100 million. 6,600 out of 100 million people paying taxes. So how much are you going to tax those people? Okay, so let's say you got a billionaire. Now, you know, to be getting that club, you have to have at least $1 billion, and some people more. The people who are in the top four or five of the richest people in the United States, that list varies basically depending on the stock market day to day. You got Elon Musk, you got Jeff Bezos, you got Bill Gates. Now you have Steve Ballmer. He has apparently cracked that club. He was the CEO of Microsoft after Gates left, and he was one of the original employees. I think maybe Steve Wozniak, but anyway, those five guys, yes, that goes up and down depending on what day it is and what the stock price is, you know? So, especially among the top three, literally changes day to day. But, so those guys have, I think Bezos is worth $260 billion, I think, if I'm correct, a quarter of a trillion dollars, basically. And you got Musk and Gates not far behind. So, all right, you got those guys. But to get into the club, you only need $1 billion. Only, I say only, but I'm trying to make a point here. All right, so how much are you going to tax these guys? How much? You know? All right, let's say you tax each one of them 10% of their wealth. And, of course, that's basically, that's highly questionable and unethical. We've always in the United States taxed on income and not the money you already have. But let's say Jeff Bezos is worth $260 billion. I have no idea what his actual income is every year. I don't know. I think we can assume it's in the billions, you know? So let's say you tax 10% of that, okay, on top of all the other taxes they're paying, you know? I mean, Sean Hannity, very famous, said this. Now, you know, Sean is the king of talk media, you know, he is. So apparently he makes, and as far as I can tell, these are realistic estimates. He makes $20 million from his radio show a year and $25 million from his TV show on Fox News. So the guy's bringing in about $45 million a year. You know, and he says, and I totally believe him, he says he pays more in total taxes, he pays more than half his income. And that would be about right if he's paying probably 40% of the federal and 10% state, and then there's fees, and there's people who are that wealthy and get slapped with additional stuff. He says he pays about 55% of his income in taxes. All right, well, in terms of income, he's not even in that club. He's probably in that club of 6,600 people who have assets of more than $100 million, you know, unless he's like blowing it on something. I don't know, coke. I have no idea. I'm joking about that. I don't think Sean Hannity's doing any drugs at all, and I don't think he's gambling. I don't think he's doing any of that crap. So, all right. So you already got those people. So how much money are you going to collect? Now, I haven't done the math. I should have sat down and done it, you know. If you're getting $100 million, so let's say you're getting $100 million from 10,000 people, okay? $100 million, a billion, okay. I guess that does add up. You know, if you're getting $100 million from 10,000 people. But no, you wouldn't. No, what am I talking about? No, you get $100 million from 1,000 people. So that would be $100 billion. Right, that would be about right. Okay, so that makes my point. All right, so what is the budget of the United States? $16 trillion, right? I'm sorry, I did my original net math wrong. No, I was talking about getting $100 million from 1,000 people, right? Okay. So, and that would be $100 billion. And what does that fund the government for, like, five days? Where do you think you're going to get this money? This is the thing. So the thing is, the alternate method, and the method that's always worked, is by lowering taxes, you stimulate the economy, you get more people paid more money, and therefore they pay more money in taxes. That's the way it works. And it's way more efficient and works much better and will get you more money than taxing a bunch of rich people, like an extra 10% or something like that. And I just gave you the definition of what a bunch of rich people are. So anyway, Moore's on there. And so, Moore's on TV. He's talking about this. He's talking about the exact same thing I was talking about last night. This was this afternoon, about the fact that why don't the Democrats ever realize this? That they're not interested in revenues into the government. They aren't. They're just interested in taxing more people. Either that or they're stupid, and they might be stupid. Because it's like I said, every single time in U.S. history that federal taxes have been cut, revenues into the government have increased. Every single time. Now, hypothetically, if you got that down low enough, that wouldn't happen. You know, I mean, there'd be there's some sweet spot there. Where if people are paying so low, taxes are so low, let's say, I don't know, 5 or 8% or something like that, it probably wouldn't happen. But when you're talking about a top tax rate of 39% and you lower it to 21%, yeah, for sure. And then you look at Kennedy. And so who was I talking about last night about the fact, who said that Kennedy, I was talking about the fact that somebody prominent was saying that Kennedy would be a Republican today, John F. Kennedy. He cut taxes too. And you have to understand, I mean, this is unbelievable. This is true. The top federal tax rate when Kennedy took office in 1961 was 94%. No fucking lie. I thought it was 92%. And Murray Sabrin, the economist, he comes on my show, he corrected me. I didn't realize that was true. It was 94%. Now, granted, and, you know, Sabrin brought this up, hardly anybody actually paid that rate. That was under very special circumstances having to do with, you know, whether your income went up tremendously over the course of 1 year. But actually, like people who work on royalties, authors, musicians, they had the ability, they had the possibility of paying that rate. And it's something to do with the amount of money you paid in the previous year or something like that. But it wasn't at all unusual for wealthy people to pay 70%. We had a 70% tax rate. I personally think paying, and this gets back to what Hannity was saying, paying more than half is literally is morally wrong. It is. You can't do that. And so you can't take more than half of people's income for taxes. I actually personally think it shouldn't be more than a third, but you definitely can't take more than half. That's just plain wrong. You know, at that point, you have no incentive to work. You know, it's like gambling. I mean, I don't know I have mathematically studied gambling. You don't want a sure bet. because you won't get enough returns on a sure bet. You need to gamble. you need to actually take a little bit of a risk. So the question is, how much risk you take? Anyway, okay. So I'm sure you don't want to hear about my theories of gambling here on Jim Peters at Night at 11 p.m. But anyway, yeah, I've studied this. I do this sort of shit. And when you guys are out watching movies, that's what I'm doing. I'm sitting down with a calculator. What's the return on a roulette wheel? Okay, so, all right. But anyway, so yeah. So Ro Khanna said, yeah, he wants to raise taxes. Carville says that people aren't giving Biden a fair shake on this. And I call bullshit. I did last night too. And I'm talking about this for half an hour. I did not mean to make this the subject of my monologue tonight. It actually wasn't. I just wanted to refer to last night. Because, you know, these people, they're talking and talking and talking. No, the economy is in the dumpster. There's no, you know, you can talk about your low unemployment rate. You know, if I have to pay, you know, freaking $9 for a 12 pack of eggs, it's like, and no, that's an exaggeration. I know that. But still, the fact of the matter is, if you go into the grocery store, shit is through the roof. It is. And it probably is not going to come down now. It probably isn't. Because now that we have basically become normalized these prices. So even if, it will come down slowly. Because that gets to another thing I was talking about here, too. One moment. I'm looking for something that I typed in. Oh, shit, I can't find it. Oh, well. Yeah, that was exciting, wasn't it? So, yeah, these protesters, they're protesting capitalism. You know, right. Yeah, sure. Let's dump the only thing that's worked. You know? There have been t-shirts that say this, but it's really true. Capitalism sucks, but it's still by far the best thing we've got. You know, unless we can eliminate at some point all scarcity, which we actually probably in a few hundred years will. I mean, I've talked about this in the future. We will have atomic replication. Right now, you know how a 3D printer works. Well, when we can do that on an atomic scale, which is like how that stupid little replicator machine worked in the captain's office in Star Trek, When we can do that, we will probably not have any physical needs anymore, you know, because, you'll literally be able to construct anything, out of dust, dirt. But we're 200 years away from that. By the way, I once read an article, a scientific article that said that, you know, so I don't know if you watch Star Trek Next Generation. Well, Captain Picard says to the machine, Earl Grey tea hot. And the machine makes a little cup of Earl Grey tea. Somebody's actually figured out what kind of... Okay, so it will work exactly like a regular 3D printer does now. So you need a pattern, right? The pattern, I'm not even talking about the tea now, just the cup. The pattern to make the cup would be like quintillions of petabytes of data. I mean, it'd be just an absurd amount of data that you would need to make the pattern to make a simple cup. And you're wondering, well, we'll never be able to do that. But here's the thing, folks. They're working on quantum memory right now. We're probably going to be able to do it in about 5 years. In 5 years, they figure they're going to have something where they're going to get the entire data of all the data on Earth in something the size of a sugar cube. Conversely, this is really interesting because I've always wondered about this. How the hell does Google and YouTube, owned by the same company, where do they store all this shit? I mean, I think if I'm right, there's 300 minutes of Google of video uploaded to YouTube every minute. Did you hear me? There's 300 minutes uploaded every minute or second or something like that. It's an ungodly amount. Now, you know, and so I'm sure they have a whole team of people every day who's hooking up more solid state drives. That's what they're doing, you know. But the thing is, at some point, you're going to run out of space. And this has also been speculated. John Dvorak, the famous tech columnist, he also talked about the fact that, so, you know, the Google search works so well because essentially Google has built a mirror of the public internet internally in-house. They have it on their server farms. But as if I'm right, there's a billion pages added to the World Wide Web every day, if I'm right. I think that's what it is. A billion pages every day. How do you store that shit? Well, I'll tell you, part of the reason the way they're storing it is they're starting not to index stuff that's hardly ever accessed. So you have to have a public website of some popularity at all for to end up in the index, which is a reason if you start a website now, it takes a good 6 months before it's actually indexed by Google, before you actually show up on a search, even in like on like page like 17, even that low. But they can't, you know, they're having a hard time doing this. Now, Google just announced last month that they're now going to start on Gmail, they're going to start deleting emails that are over a certain age, that have never been accessed, you know, under those certain conditions. Yeah, because they're running out of space. They need space. Until we crack this quantum computer thing, shit. I mean, I don't know. I don't know how they do it. And then, you know, Jazz Shaw's on the show, and he's talking about, he's really into the AI stuff. He's following it as a reporter very carefully. And I read the same thing. We were talking about the same thing, about the fact that you think the server farms, okay, you know all those stupid pictures you upload to Facebook? Do you know how big the server farms at Facebook are? They have these data centers all over the world. There's like 40 or 50 of them in the United States. They're enormous. They build them next to rivers because they need the cooling power from the river water to cool the fucking facility. That's how much fucking heat they have going on there because all the computers they have going on. I mean, it's unbelievable. Mind-boggling. But at some point, seriously, how many photos are they going to keep? I mean, it's like, you know, they can't go on forever. And right now it is. I mean, it seems to be infinite right now. There's people think there's an adage on that if it's on the internet, it's on the internet forever. Right now, that's true. It was not true 20 years ago. Case in point, I famously told you I'm not on social media. The show's all over the place, but I don't post anywhere. I do not have any personal accounts on social media at all. I have a Facebook account only to accommodate the show. That's it. But 20 years ago, 25 years ago, I was all over the internet, you know, but people say, well, the internet never forgets. Well, you try looking for me now. That stuff is all gone. It's all gone. And I mean, I was posting a lot, but it was web 1.0. I mean, I think I pretty much stopped around 2005. I think I started to realize this was a complete waste of time. It was ridiculous. And also, I got this show now. You want to know what I think? Tune in. Watch it. You know, I don't need to post anywhere. Christ. And I know that I'm not, you know, I know that I'm not, that posting is kind of publicity. I know that I can get some extra traffic. I don't care. I really don't. It's like, you know, I'm going to do this. This is what I do. You want to know what I have to say? Tune in. That's all I have to tell you. But the reason I brought that up is because, like I said, I am gone off the internet. And 20 years ago, I was all over the place. You know, I remember in 1997, 8, 2000, 2003, I would do searches on my name. Like, all sorts of shit came up. It's unbelievable. Now, nothing. Nothing. It's amazing. Nothing. I have no, other than this show, I have no presence online at all. I should say my former employer, some of those radio shows and podcasts are still on the web. You can still find them. But that's it. And also, other than my name on the show or on the description, you have to listen to actually find out what I'm thinking. This thing about the fact that the internet is forever is probably only temporary. At some point, you run out of space. And also the fact that, you know, you and your moron family, I'm sorry. That's a great idea, Jim. Insult your viewers. What a great thing to do. Anyway, you and your moron family, yeah. You know, you go on vacation and take those pictures of the Grand Canyon. They got to go somewhere, you know, and you keep doing it, you know. So, oh, man. Somebody just take me out behind the barn and shoot me. Get, you know, put me down. It's unbelievable. So, okay, so I'm getting back to what I was talking about here. So they're going to protest at the 30 Rock Christmas tree tomorrow. They're going to protest all over the place because that's what they do. That's what they do. They protest. Now, why are they protesting? Because of it's social justice. That's why. Just ask them. That's why they're protesting. They have no idea. They have no idea where they're protesting. I think in somebody's mastermind back in the behind the veil somewhere, there's a plan that, well, they're protesting because they want to convince the public that more people believe their point of view than actually exists. And believe it or not, according to the latest polls I've seen, that seems to be working, at least among Democrats. When Hamas first attacked Israel on October 7th, the Democrats were like 89% were for Israel, and that number has dropped. Is not dropped below 50% the last I've seen, but it's dropped like 20 points in the last month and a half. So, that sense, maybe it's actually working. Oh, Republicans, no. Republicans, they won't, numbers doesn't budge. Republicans don't listen to this shit. Listen to these kids. They're stupid. But there's a lot of, you know, especially if you had a few glasses of wine and you're watching Nora O'Donnell on the CBS News, it's like, oh, you know, well, God, maybe they have a point, you know? I don't know. And then the pollster calls or you get online or, you know, I don't know. I don't. And what is it with women and wine? Would somebody explain this to me? It's like, you know, I love wine. I can't drink it. It's because it's the tannins or something like that. It gives me an enormous headache. I mean, it's too bad. I really do like it. I'll be perfectly blunt. I like drinking. I do. I hardly ever do it because you try drinking and then doing this, you know? I mean, you know, like I said, over the last 3-4 years, I have hosted about 400 podcasts and radio shows, which is, you know, so that's, what is that, 1 every 3 or 4 days, you know? Yeah, you try doing what I do and try drinking. It's not going to work. You can't do it. You can't. And it's terrible because I really like it. I do. I like drinking. But no, not doing hardly any of it anymore. So the one thing I do want to point out about these kids is, and here's the interesting thing, and this is actually true of the vast majority of Americans. People have their widely held political beliefs that they hold in their chest and their heart dearly. And hardly anyone ever actually tries to try them out to see if they work. This is the thing. And so I'll segue here to the Chicago mayor, Brandon Johnson. He's now complaining. He says that the things that are going wrong in his administration are based on the stuff his predecessor did. And also he says, and MAGA Republicans, of course. let me read you his quote. What we've seen is a very raggedy form of right-wing extremism. Everyone knows that the right-wing extremism of this country has targeted democratically run cities, and quite frankly, they have been intentional about their going after democratically run cities that are led by people of color. And their whole motivation is to create disruption and chaos. Oh yeah, we're doing that. Yeah, those homeless people on the street in Chicago, all those people that are shooting everybody, I'm sure they're all MAGA Republicans. What a bunch of bullshit. I mean, really. And, you know, I don't know, are we reaching a reckoning point? Last night I talked about the fact, and my friends over at Hot Air, David Strum and Chad Shaw, they have talked about the fact that support for the mainstream media has reached an all-time low and continues to plummet. I mean, the last thing I said, I saw that people who were asked if they had a lot or quite a bit of support for the mainstream media was 32%, or it was like 60% 25 years ago. And it's continued to drop. And also, I pointed this out last night too, on Facebook, Breitbart.com is the single most referenced external domain as far as links is concerned. Not the New York Times, not Washington Post, not Associated Press, not Breitbart. So, you know, it's not that this is not coming back to bite these people in the ass. But like, I've said this many times, and it bears repeating because it's really important. When it comes to like CNN and cable news, the CNN's ratings have dropped, and this is no exaggeration, 90% in the last 3 years since Joe Biden took office. Their ratings have dropped 90%. That now they could barely scrape 500,000 people in prime time. And basically on cable TV, if you're following the statistics and scoring at home, anything under 1 million people is zero. And then you're wondering, well, they're going to go out of business. Well, here's the deal. No, they won't, because of carriage fees. They get paid about $1 per subscriber per month on every cable system or equivalent, like YouTube TV or Hulu Live, that they're on in America. They get paid about $1. In other words, they're getting roughly $100 to $150 million a month before they even lift a finger. And that's because mostly their legacy status. They were the very first, not only the very first cable news network, they were the very first 24/7 network on cable television at all in 1980, all the way back to 1980. I mean, it's hard to believe there was virtually no cable television in 1980, and everyone thought Ted Turner was nuts. They thought he was just stone cold crazy for doing this. So not only did he start this cable news network, it was running 24/7. They were running live reports in the middle of the night, and everyone thought he was crazy. A year later, in 1981, MTV starts, and MTV is running 24/7 too. Now, granted, they appeared to be live, but they weren't. None of the shows on MTV at the beginning were live. They were all actually pre-recorded and then played back, although they never said that. There was the appearance they were live, but they weren't. But they were running 24/7 too. They were the second cable television network basically to do that. And then basically it was off to the races. And then people started to realize, oh my God, look at all this stuff. We got to pay for it. And then, you know, I don't know how much cable television cost in 1982. I have no idea. It's probably like, you know, $10 a month, probably something, you know. Now the average cable bill in America is $125. $124, if I'm right, exactly. That's the average. And are people in, you know, and here's the deal. I pay for this, and I realize there's basically only 10 to 12 channels I watch on a regular basis, you know. And what I got, 90? I'm paying for 90 channels. I watch 12. Well, that's you know, John Nolte at Breitbart, he says, you know, you're nuts if you do this. And I'm starting to think he's right, you know. It's like, you're crazy. Actually, I am dumping it. I'm trying to figure out a solution where I can get some cable news channels and not get the rest of it. I think I got something. I don't know. Write me and I'll write you back. I don't know if I want to talk about that on TV because I don't want to diss anybody per se. But anyway, yeah, so Brandon Johnson says that Lori Lightfoot and the MAGA Republicans caused all his problems. What a bunch of bullshit, you know. And here's what we got. Here's the problem right now. Nobody who runs for office is prepared to actually do the job of the office. First of all, unless you've done it before or ran for office before, there's no way you can be prepared. There is that. But the other problem is we are electing highly unqualified and highly inexperienced people. And this is not even a partisan issue. I do not believe this. We elect as many Republican doofuses as we do Democratic doofuses. The vast majority of these people have no business doing this. And then, it is starting to trickle up. You know, Dwayne The Rock Johnson, he's thinking about running for president. Now, the problem with this is that, okay, people laughed at Trump, and Trump ended up being a really good president. I got something else I have to read to you here, too. So, hold on. So, this is Bernie Marcus. He was one of the founders of Home Depot. He's a billionaire, so he's one of those 800 people I was talking about earlier. He says he's going to back Donald Trump financially, even if Trump was convicted. Now, there's a really, really big caveat here. I'm a Trump supporter. I'm a Trump supporter, and I want to read this. Summed up why I'm a Trump supporter better than any other person I've ever heard. This is his quote. He said, quote, "I understand the frustration of some of my Republican friends who do not like or are offended by things Donald Trump does and says. I, too, have been frustrated at times, but we cannot let his brash style be the reason we walk away from his otherwise excellent stewardship of the United States during his first term in office." That's right. He was an excellent president. Yeah, you can talk about the bad tweets, the mean tweets. You can talk about his vindictive personality, all this sort of... He is a flawed man. I don't know a single person who even supports him who disagrees with the statement. I don't know a single one. And I do know a lot of Republicans who hate his guts. You know, I understand why you hate the guy. I do. I understand. But the thing is, especially now, when the next president is going to have a huge burden undoing all the shit that's happened in the last 3-4 years. And I'm supporting Trump because I think he has proven that he can do it. Now, that does he? I can't predict the future. That doesn't mean he will. But of all the candidates running on the Republican side, and we do have some formidable ones, Nikki Haley has turned out to be quite a divisive figure. I find this kind of fascinating. I don't have any real feelings about her either way, other than the fact that was it the second debate where she got up and said, "Look, we have to come to terms with the fact we're not going to be able to outlaw abortion. We don't have the votes." And I thought, well, she's just right. You can talk about how much you're against abortion until you're blue in the face. She's just simply right. That's a fact. You're not going to. Not only that, it appears the American public doesn't want that either. So, I found her forthrightness a breath of fresh air. Other than that, I have no real opinion. DeSantis, I think DeSantis could do a pretty good job. I really do. I think this is not going to be his time, but in the future, I think DeSantis can and will be a really good president. But once again, I'm speculating, we all speculate. The thing is, I'm admitting that I'm speculating and I don't know if I'm right. I don't. If you're sitting at home thinking, I know DeSantis is going to be president. No, you don't. Because the thing is, it's unlike any other job on the planet. And you don't know what it's going to be like till you get in it. Now, it's historically, being a governor is the best training for being president. Because you are in an executive function. So, there's that, But look, Jimmy Carter was an excellent governor of Georgia, and he ended up being a terrible president. And the thing is, you almost feel for this guy, because like I've said before, his presidency went terribly. Part of it was not of his doing, but still, and he couldn't fix it. But he knew the entire time things were not. He did acknowledge that things were going well. He did. Whereas Joe Biden, I talked about this last night. Where do you get a more inept, incompetent bunch of people? And this is the reason. None of them have ever done this before. And they think, but the problem is none of them have ever done anything before. They've never done anything. They've gone to school. They've studied political science. Oh, that's really good. Yeah, you do that. Like this guy, Bernie Marcus. Okay, he started Home Depot. Do you know how hard that is? It's like I had a liberal friend of mine. It's the single stupidest thing I've ever heard this guy say in his life. I did not call him on this because I don't like to talk politics with my friends, but he said this about the fact, I happened to mention the fact, Jeff Bezos created 1 million jobs. And he said, no, he didn't. He said, those people would have been employed anyway. I cannot explain to you how stupid that comment is. You should almost be put in jail for being that dumb. And this guy's not a dumb guy. That's the problem. They're all highly educated people, and they have no experience doing anything. If you had a job for 30 years, well, God, good for you. God bless you. I'm glad you took care of your family. Do you know what you're doing when it comes to running the country? No. And they prove it every fucking day. Every day. Joe Biden has no experience doing anything outside of government. That's because these people, and Biden in particular, he thinks that he's accomplishing something by passing a bill. Bullshit. You just, you know, No, you don't do anything. The American people do shit, and then they send you their money, you know, and they expect you to steward it and get and do some stuff for the good of the people and the good of the country, and you guys can't wrap your mind around that. It's just crazy. I can't tell you how much it bothers me. So, yeah, you know, you want to try starting Home Depot? You try that, because I tell you, 95% of the people that try starting Home Depots fail. And you never hear about them. And I'm one of them. I've started a couple really, really big businesses, and they failed. You know? It's really tough. Look, you know, waking up in the morning and look in the mirror and said, you know, maybe I fucked this up. And the thing is, in one case in particular, I didn't really fuck it up. But the thing is, I didn't save it either. So, you know, it's on me. You know, and I know that. And that's the thing, when you have to come to terms with the fact it's all on you if you're running these things, you're founding these things. 95% of the Home Depots that start never come to fruition, or you never hear about them, or you never hear about the people who fail, or the people who file bankruptcy, or the companies that file bankruptcy, you never hear about them. You hear about the success stories, and also, I got to comment on this too, Jeff Bezos is one brilliant SOB. He really is. I mean, if you follow the founding of this company, because I founded an internet company about the same time he did. In some ways, he did everything wrong or contrary to conventional wisdom, and it still worked out, especially in marketing. You know, now I didn't know this until recently, but he says that he founded Amazon with the intent of selling everything. He said that was the ultimate goal. He chose books and CDs because it was the easiest thing to both sell and inventory. That's the reason he decided he was, they were just looking around for something to sell. Literally, he didn't care. He had no particular, skin in any game philosophically or passionately. He's not a big passionate guy about books. What are we going to sell? That'll work in terms of keeping the inventory? Well, they picked that. That's how they started. And then they started to branch out. And anybody who knows anything about marketing knows that you're diluting your brand if you branch out from. They were known as a bookstore. You know, when Amazon started, they weren't the world's biggest store. They weren't a bookstore. It was the world's biggest bookstore. And that's what they were known by until about 2000. Until, you know, they were selling books. And then in 2000, he started to branch out into other shit. Then he's selling washing machines. And me and a whole bunch of other people who've studied marketing are looking at them, no, man, this is not going to work. You can't do this. Everybody's tried this. The vast majority of people try this. They fail. And he didn't. You know, I mean, it might have been the delivery system, the internet, might have been the difference. I don't know. But they did not. You know, he did a whole bunch of shit you're not supposed to do, and it still worked out. Matter of fact, if you follow this, the only single thing failure Amazon's really had ever was the Fire Phone, the cell phone they had designed. That's about the only thing, and it was really unique too. I never saw one, but apparently it had a curved screen and could actually kind of broadcast or display 3D video without goggles. Apparently, it was apparently kind of cool, but it failed. That's the only thing they've ever done, as far as I know, that's actually failed. Alexa through the roof. AWS, oh my God. I mean, say everybody's on AWS. You know, Netflix start to build out their server farm to host these movies. This is when they were first starting. They didn't have anywhere near the traffic they had now, and finally decided, oh, fuck it, let's put it on AWS. And now all of Netflix runs off AWS. That's Amazon Web Services, if you don't know what that is. It's a business-to-business thing. Businesses contract Amazon to store and basically broadcast their data. And the reason it works is because they're really, really good at it. As far as I know, no one's ever breached that system ever. And also, it's quite cheap for what they do. There's that too. So if you watch Netflix, the next time you watch Netflix, you're watching that movie off an Amazon server. So, I mean, it's like, so yeah, so it's like these are people who have done stuff. You know, now I understand if you've done stuff and you made a shitload of money, you probably don't want to get into politics. The fact that Trump did is really kind of freaking amazing. You know, I mean, you know, people poo-poo Trump and say, well, you know, he's been dishonest, all this sort of shit. But I do know this. He says his dad lent him $1 million to start his company. His biographer says it's $40 million. So let's go into the assumption it's $40 million. Let's go into the assumption he just lied, okay? All right? He's turned $40 million into $5 billion bucks. And, like, you try that. That's all I'll tell you. You try that. You know, and not only that, he built a bunch of buildings with the name in the process. Now, unfortunately, because of all the legal shit he's gone through, and also even just being in the presidency, there's talk now that he's fallen out of the billionaire, that he's worth a little less than $1 billion now. So he might not even be in that count of 800 people I'm talking about. Oh, man. So I'm backing Trump, and this guy's backing Trump, and you know who else is backing Trump? The guy who leads the Rhode Island chapter of Black Lives Matter. And I don't have his name here. It's Mark Fisher, I do. So he's a black man, and he runs the Rhode Island chapter of Black Lives Matter, and he decides he's endorsing Trump. He says the Democratic Party has let the black community down. It's about time people realize it, recognize it. And I don't know. The poll out yesterday said that Trump's support among black people in the United States has gone from, it was 6% in 2016. It's currently 20%, 22% now. Oh, I forgot to address this, though. And this is really important. This is Bernie Marcus said, that he's going to support Trump even if he's convicted. That's actually the Achilles heel here. You know, I'm an election denier. I admit it. And I've always said the proof is the number of people and crowds that Biden drew during the 2020 campaign. I don't think you can draw that few people. It was nobody. Nobody showed up for anything. Still nobody shows up. I mean, every once in a while he has a good showing. He got about 500 people showed up in Milwaukee a few weeks ago, you know. But as a general rule, nobody shows up to see the president. You know, I know that, like, at Ohio State University in 2022, 30 people showed up to see the president. There's a very famous thing that got buried in the media, but this is apparently true, that in Lancaster, Louisiana, in October 2021, nobody showed up to see the president. No one. Not a single person. So you tell me a guy like that can draw 81 million votes, more votes than Barack Obama, who's undisputably the Frank Sinatra of American politics. There's no absolutely no doubt about that. I mean, hell, I'd take my pants off for the guy. You know, shit. You know, I think he was a bad president. But, you know, he has, you know, they talk about that charisma thing. Well, no, Barack has it. There's no doubt about it. You can't deny that at all. But, the Achilles heel in Trump's reelection bid is if he's convicted of any of these crimes. Supposedly the polls have said he's leading. He's leading in almost every poll right now, almost every single one. And the other thing is, and I'm willing, you know, I'm here to call balls and strikes. And certainly, this may amaze you, folks. Sometimes I'm wrong. You know, we'll never find out about the 2020 election in definitively. But one of the things that makes me realize I might be wrong about the fact that it was something fishy was up is the fact that John Nolte pointed this out in Breitbart last week, and that is at no point at any time during the 2020 campaign did Trump lead in any poll. Zero. He never led ever. And now it's the opposite. Now he's leading in almost all of them. But the thing is, the pollsters have asked people, if Trump is convicted of a crime, would you still vote for him? About 12% of the people said no. And that would be enough to throw the election. So this is going to be a really, you know, if you're a conservative and you're looking at this and say, well, we got this in the bag. No, we don't. No. Now, it was in Pennsylvania. They've started and this is the local of the Pennsylvania chapter of the Republican National Committee. It was not the actual whole nationwide one. They have started a campaign to get Republicans to vote early via mail-in ballots and early drop boxes, because that you can do that in Pennsylvania. And they've decided, well, you know, we can't just let the Democrats run away with this. And that's true. And why are we doing this nationwide? You know, I'm starting to think that Vivek Ramaswamy was right when he said Ronna McDaniel needs to go. I think at this point she's a loser. You know, now she's been really good about defending the stuff she's done right, and yeah, that stuff exists. But the fact of the matter is, we've lost one presidential campaign. We did not do as well in the midterms as we thought we would be, and things. She does not have a good record to run on. She doesn't. I think was it Ramaswamy or somebody said if we were running a for-profit company and those were her results, she'd be fired, and she would, you know. And I think the only reason she's in there is because she represents the old Republican guard. You know, you do know this. She's Mitt Romney's niece, you know. And I think there's a whole bunch of people who want the party to go back to 1980, where we can just collect money just like the Democrats collect money now, you know. I mean, you know, advocating for conservative philosophy here, but I'm not necessarily advocating for Republicans. I'm not. There are so many dishonest people in Washington, it's mind-boggling, you know, and it's got, I think we might be at a tipping point here because the mainstream media is increasingly exposed as being liars and chumps for these people, and then you got people doing like what I'm doing, and God knows, you know, I know not, you know, the right now, 10,000 people are not going to watch the show. I know that, but there's enough people doing what I'm doing, in aggregate. So I think maybe people are going to start to be really, really intolerant of putting up with the shit from their elected officials. So far, it does not seem to be so. I mean, Brandon Johnson, we were just talking about Chicago. It's unbelievable that the people of Chicago elected somebody even more left than Lori Lightfoot, who was a complete abject failure. I mean, she was. And so they elected somebody even more to the left than her. And this guy's proving to be a complete abject failure. And he's blaming it on her, you know, which is just hilarious. But at some point, I know there's a certain number of Democrats who would never vote for a Republican ever, because we're evil. You know, I'm not a Republican, but I'll just say as a conservative, we're evil. There's no doubt about that. We've been painted as evil, so they're never going to do it. You know, but at some point, people are going to have to slowly wake up and say, we want a different result. We've got to vote some different people in. And that includes Republicans, too, because this old guard Republican Mitt Romney bullshit is not working. It didn't work before. It's not going to work in the future. Things have changed. And yeah, why did they change? Trump. That's the reason. Anyway, I'm thinking about posting this thing that Bernie Marcus said here. I'm thinking about posting it on the blog because that quote from him sums up exactly why I'm a Trump supporter. Yeah, he says stupid shit. He does some stupid shit stuff, you know. But as far as actually running the company, Freudian slip, running the country, he was excellent by and large. You know, I mean, no one's perfect, but still, he did a really good job. And that's, you know, so yeah. Do I wish he'd tweet less? Yeah. Well, he's been pretty good right now. Matter of fact, a lot of people thinking that he's so caught up, him being caught up in these trials could actually be good for him because it might keep him from saying stupid shit. And that might be true, you know? It's like, now, I know where, as an entrepreneur, I know where Trump's coming from, and that is if something seems to work, you keep on doing it until it doesn't work anymore. That's number one rule of entrepreneurship, number one rule of business. If something's working, keep on doing it until it doesn't work anymore. And so he's got a lot of mileage off this tweeting shit, so I understand why he does it. I do. But sometimes, man, I can't imagine. I'm going to actually end with this. I had a lot of stuff that I was going to end with tonight, and I had put a thing on the show description about share. I'll do that tomorrow. I'm going to end with the fact that I can't imagine that Trump did not like lay in bed that night after the vote for Obamacare failed by one vote because of John McCain and said, you know, I shouldn't have said that shit about him being a loser. I thought that during the campaign, I thought that was the single worst thing he said. I know there's a lot of people who thought he said way worse, but I didn't. I thought, okay, you called a guy who spent 5.5 years in a concentration camp in a, you know, POW torture camp, and you called him a loser. It's like, Jesus Christ, is there any reason? And you wonder why he hates you? You know, I mean, Christ. I mean, that's severe, man. That's some nasty shit. And that came back to bite him in the ass. Trump, I mean, you know? I'm sure he spent some time staring at the ceiling that night and saying, you know, maybe I shouldn't have said that. Anyway, I want to thank you folks for watching. Tomorrow, same more of this bullshit tomorrow. So no guests. Next Wednesday, we're doing a panel discussion after the last Republican primary debate. And it's rumored that Trump is going to show up for that one. We know that. The rumors because the Secret Service has been casing the joint, and he's the only Republican candidate with Secret Service detail right now. So as a former president. So that's the rumor that he's going to be there. Other than him, I think it's going to be like three other people. I think they've got it down to DeSantis, Haley, and Christie, believe it or not. I'm not even certain if Vivek is going to make this one. But, we're doing that. And that debate is running in it's going to be from Tuscaloosa, Alabama, which is in the central time zone. So we're going to be starting our show an hour early. It's scheduled to end at 9 p.m. Central, 10 p.m. Eastern. So we're going to start that. That's next week. I work on a couple more guests, so hopefully from here on out. But this has been kind of interesting. I like talking to you folks. I hope you like listening. I'll see you tomorrow night. Same time, same channel. Good night, Esperanza. Good night, Uncle Donnie. And good night to you wherever you are. Have a nice evening.